Chapter 18. Gorm watched the two doppelgangers circle each other warily, blades still in hand.
"Still can't tell them apart," he muttered.
"They're both imposters," sputtered Heraldin.
"I guess that depends on how long our Geist has been the Geist traveling with us," said Jin, running to join them from beneath the frozen golems.
"This is another one of those discussions that needs to wait for a better time," Laruna growled as she stalked over to them.
"We need to figure out which one's the doppelganger," said Gorm.
"The new doppelganger," added Jin.
"I mean, this whole time?"
said Heraldin, who was participating in a tangential conversation.
"Later," said the Solomancer.
"Look!"
The pair of doppelgangers, still facing off in a wide circle, charged one another. Their skin shifted back to a rich brown, noses pulled away from their blank faces, their frames expanded, bulging with new muscles.
"They're turning back to their true forms. I mean, the ones we're used to," said Gorm.
"Right." Laruna conjured flames in her palm. "The magic's coming back."
Iron and steel groaned behind them like the creaking of a frozen lake under a boot.
"Thrice cursed bones!"
Gorm turned back to the remaining golems. The lights in their glass orbs winked back on as the constructs looked around. Gorm imagined they were suffering from the mechanical equivalent of a hangover.
"Jin and Laruna, you take the ones to my left. I'll—"
His instructions cut off at the familiar pop of a crossbow bolt embedding itself in the floorboards behind him.
"Down! Get the cover!"
he shouted, diving for an overturned desk. The rest of the party followed him, but whoever fired the shot had a repeater crossbow. Another bolt pocked into the floor, followed by a cry from the Solomancer.
"Laruna!"
cried Jin, pulling the mage behind the desk with Gorm.
"I'm fine, I'm fine," she growled, clutching at her arm. "It just grazed me."
Cursing himself for forgetting his shield, Gorm looked around him. The best he could find was a small silver spoon amidst the shards of a crushed teacup. Maneuvering the spoon into position at the edge of the desk, he could make out a crouching, black-clad form in the reflection of the third window on the far wall. Gorm turned to Heraldin, who had sheltered behind a large cabinet a short distance away.
"Smoke bombs," Gorm mouthed, holding up three fingers.
"The golems," Heraldin mouthed, pointing to the main room. Gorm could hear the clicks and clanks of the golems restarting their protocols.
"Smoke bombs,"
Gorm pantomimed with extra emphasis, and the bard relented with a shrug. Heraldin produced three glass orbs from his belt pouches.
"What are we going to do?"
Jin asked as he tied a makeshift bandage around Laruna's arm.
"Well, there's a trick to fighting archers,"
Gorm growled, hefting his axe.
"What's that?"
said Laruna through gritted teeth.
"Shoot first," said Gorm, signaling Heraldin. "Cover me."
The bard's arm jerked. Three clouds of smoke burst from the floor, billows of emerald and sapphire that wound together in turquoise swirls. Gorm launched himself over the desk, axe in hand. He couldn't see the crossbowman through the smokescreen, but he could see the top of the window that the assassin was crouched in. After some quick triangulation, he sent his axe flying through the dust clouds in an arc that terminated with a thunk and panicked scrabbling. A bolt embedded itself into a nearby floorboard. The dwarf launched through the smokescreen with a manic grin and a fist cocked for a skull-cracking punch. As he emerged from the colorful vapors, he finally glimpsed the face of the crossbowman. Gorm recognized the assassin's features instantly, which likely contributed to the panic spreading over them.
"Flynn!"
Red mist was already closing in around Gorm's vision as he charged, mixing with the last wisps of Heraldin's seafoam-colored smoke. The Tinderkin paused to do some quick calculations. Without a word in reply, he dropped from the windowsill and ran.
"Get back here, you bloody bastard!"
Gorm roared, launching himself after the fleeing assassin. His pursuit was interrupted, however, by a massive iron blade slamming into the floor in front of him. The golem it belonged to stepped into his path, its eye glowing crimson.
"You mindless hunk of metal," Gorm snarled. "If Inbarti'd given you a brain, you'd know how stupid that was."
In reply, the golem snapped its head forward as it locked on again. Its eye flickered as its arm ratcheted back into position. Gorm was ready. When the golem's predictable swing came, he leapt on the arm and launched himself at its face. It briefly occurred to Gorm that, given his axe was still embedded in the windowsill, he probably should have improvised a weapon. Unfortunately, that thought, along with most of his other cogent ones, was quickly being drowned out by a rising tide of crimson. Instead of searching for an alternative to his axe, he attacked the problem, and the golem itself, as a berserker did, directly and with excessive force. With one hand he grabbed the golem's head, with the other he punched the glass eye repeatedly, slamming his bare fist into it until his bloody hand crashed through the orb and smashed the mechanisms behind it. Bellowing in triumph, Gorm leapt from the staggering golem onto the next construct in line, trying to make for the window. A third golem intervened, swinging its blade and shield to block the dwarf's path. Gorm hollered again as he landed on the floor, this time in frustration. Another, louder roar answered him. All eyes turned to the opposite end of the hall. The guild hall's wall collapsed inward as Thane made a door out of a window, bellowing in fury. The closest golem turned to look at the new combatant and chirruped quizzically as it searched for the right combat protocol. Its query ended in a metallic squeal as the construct's head was torn from its body and shoved down its neck hole. The troll tore off its arm as he passed and wielded the steel appendage like a club against the next golem. Gorm's attention was pulled back to the nearest golems by the telltale ratcheting of an incoming strike. He leapt to the right, but his dodge proved to be unnecessary. A combined storm of fire and lightning from the mages washed over the golem, blasting it from its feet and melting it into a glowing red lump. That left just one golem facing Gorm. It brandished its weapon and stared with mindless malice at the dwarf, ignoring the chaos around it. It didn't even falter as another golem's blade erupted from its chest, or as its own sword arm was seized by a troll and torn off. The angry light in its ocular orb only faded when Thane decapitated it with its own blade.
"Is that the last of them?" Luruna asked.
"Almost," said Heraldin. The heroes turned to where Gaste and his double were battling. The doppelgangers in turn paused in their duel to look at the approaching heroes and the troll rumbling up behind them.
"Don't worry," Gorm told the shapeshifters. "We got time to figure this out. Thane here's got a good sense of smell."
One Gaste stared at the troll impassively. The other wavered and bolted for the door with a cry of, "Sod this!" This turned out to be an unfortunate choice of last words. The doppelganger didn't make it two steps before the troll was upon it.
"Now is that the last of them?" said Luruna.
"I count 12 golems down," said Jin.
"We've still got to go after Flynn,"
growled Gorm, his fury still burning.
"We need to find Bert and Patches as well," said Jin.
Heraldin looked around the empty room.
"And what about the pirate guy?"
"The who?"
asked Gorm.
"The guy in a long coat and a pirate hat," said Heraldin. "Shouted in nautical terms, carried a saber, said yar a couple of times."
"You're sure it was a pirate?"
Gorm raised a skeptical eyebrow.
"It's not the sort of thing you can mistake for something else,"
Luruna spoke through gritted teeth as she clutched her wounded arm, right down to the big hoop earring.
"I saw him leap out the window at one point," said Jin.
"I didn't see him."
Thane dropped the deflated remains of the doppelganger as he stalked back toward the party.
"It was well before you arrived," the Noctomancer said. "I think it might have even been before Gorm showed up."
Gorm shook his head.
"Why would he run away, then? They were winning for a bit there."
"He didn't look like he was running." Heraldin scratched at his whiskers. "More like searching for his target." Jin nodded.
"They knew our group and came after each of us individually."
A ball of ice ran down Gorm's spine and dropped into his stomach.
"That means he was probably searching for Kaitha!"
bellowed Thane.
"Now, she's a beauteous sight if an I ever seen one," said the pirate,
or rather the assassin dressed as a pirate. The important bit, Bert felt, was the saber the man held as he sauntered into the alley.
"You stay back!"
Bert brandished his knife in a manner that even he knew was ridiculous.
"Yar, I don't think I will," said the assassin, advancing. "See, old Captain Jones here was sent to kill a particular wench, and 'tis my good fortune to find her sleepin'. Makes the killin' all the easier." "Yeah, you'll have to get by me first."
Bert had heard about people saying such things in ballads and epics. Now that he said the words, they sounded a lot more foolish.
"Aye, that be the idea," said Captain Jones. "If an I want to kill her, I gotta kill you." "Well, I didn't mean that exactly," said Bert. "Oh? No matter. I'll be doing it anyhow."
The assassin leapt forward. His saber flashed in the moonlight. Bert ducked and slashed out blindly with his own knife. He felt his blade bite into the pirate's flesh as a searing agony raked across his ear. The kobold leapt back with a yelp of pain. The assassin withdrew as well, clutching a bloodied wrist.
"Yar, that was a lucky blow," Captain Jones hissed through gritted teeth. "You sure about that?"
the kobold growled, waving the knife and trying to ignore the blood dribbling into his eye.
"Bert, is that you?"
Bert and the assassin both froze at the elf's murmur. Glancing back, he could see that she was stirring as though from a dream, her eyes shut and her brow furrowed. Her hand had found her bow, however, and she clutched it close.
"Yar, I clearly don't have the time for this bilge," snarled Captain Jones. "So I suggest you run your flea-bitten arse out of here and leave me to my work afore I run you through." "Yeah, right, sailor,"
Bert's hackles were up.
"You've got no idea what I'd be up against if I let you touch her."
The pirate assassin took a step forward.
"Arr, let me assure you that I—"
Any promise that the assassin might have made was cut off by a thunderous shout, a sound somewhere between an avalanche and a dragon's roar.
"Well, now you've got some idea," said Bert.
Captain Jones didn't have time to respond. He glanced down the street intersecting the alley just as a troll hit him like a catapult stone.
"Yeah, now you get it."
Bert grimaced and looked away. A man wasn't supposed to make the noises that Captain Jones was making. Then again, a man wasn't supposed to bend like Captain Jones was bending, either.
"All right, Thane, enough. I mean, come on, he's done."
Thane didn't seem to notice the kobold. It would have been hard to hear anything over the final screams of the assassin and the troll's own enraged roaring. There was a fury in the troll's eyes that Bert had never seen before, and it didn't seem like anything could snap Thane from his frenzy. Then the arrow struck. The shaft protruding from the back of the troll's head didn't seem to hurt him as much as surprise him. He turned around, only for another shot to strike him in the throat, snowy fletching sprouting from his jugular like a wildflower. A heartbeat later, yet another arrow bloomed in his right eye, prompting a grunt of pain.
"Troll!"
Caitha screamed. Bert turned to find Caitha standing, her hair wild, her nightclothes filthy, and her face a mask of terror. She was already notching another arrow while her eyes searched for some way out of the alley.
"Caitha, no!"
Bert hollered. It was too late. Caitha loosed the arrow, striking Thane in the vicinity of his heart. In one fluid motion, she grabbed Bert and threw him through a nearby window.
"Run! Get away, Bert!"
she screamed, before taking off down the alley. By the time Bert righted himself and got back to the window, the elf was already scaling a fence at the end of the alley. She hit the ground running on the other side and sprinted down the streets of Hertswood.
"Well, ain't that a fine way to treat a guy who saved your life," grumbled Bert, clamoring through the window. "I took a saber to the ear, but a troll shows up and it's everyone for themselves. Just chuck a guy through the window and hope he doesn't get eaten."
Bert hopped down into the alleyway and dusted himself off.
"I tell you, the kobolds always get the worst of it. I suppose you got the worst of this one, right? Thane?"
He looked up at the troll. Thane still watched the fence the elf had disappeared over. His throat made little gurgling noises as he breathed, and black blood seeped from his eye down the side of his face like a trail of dark tears.
"You all right?"
said Bert.
"Thane? I mean, I know that didn't go well exactly, but, you know, it'll be fine. Probably."
Thane pulled the arrow from his eye with a horrible schlucking sound. By the time he blinked twice, his eyeball had regenerated enough to stare in shock at the enchanted arrow that Caitha had shot him with.
"Look, she'll be back and we'll explain what happened. It was a misunderstanding, right?"
If the troll noticed the kobold at all, he didn't show it. He absently plucked the arrow from his neck as he stared down the alley. The closing gap in his throat made little whistling noises with every breath. They were coming shallow and fast now.
"I mean, that looked bad, right? Killing a guy like that, you know, all messy, just as she's waking up, and you all covered in—"
Bert struggled to find the words.
"Human? It'd be easy to get the wrong idea, you know? But it's not you. It's just how it looks."
The troll pulled the last arrow from his chest. It had punctured one of the pouches on the bandolier he wore, so that a few trinkets fell amid the blood gushing from his wound. He opened his mouth as if to say something, but he only made a small choking noise, like stones grinding together.
"She will come back," Bert said, "and we'll talk to her, all right? She'll see. Thane? Thane, take a deep breath, buddy.
Thane took a deep breath, and then another, and soon his whole body was shaking with the force of the ragged, sobbing breaths that he gulped in. He shut his eyes, dropped to all fours, and let loose a long and mournful roar, halfway between a bellow and a groan.
No, no, said Bert. Listen, it's gonna be...
Thane was beyond listening. He set off at a full run, fleeing toward the north gate in a blind sprint. Bert threw his paws in the air helplessly as the troll retreated.
And there we go, he grumbled, fishing another cigarette out of his vest. It's all down the gutter now.
Water splashed over the muddy street as Gerald Flynn dropped into the gutter and took off running. The sounds of battle had faded behind the Tinderkin, and that meant the sounds of pursuit would start soon enough. He dove down a side street, making tracks in the mud, and then quickly doubled back through the gutter again. Flynn grimaced as he ran. Weeks of planning and a small mountain of gold had gone down the drain in a few minutes, and he wasn't any closer to killing Ingerson. No, worse, he was farther behind. Now, finding assassins willing to take the job on would be much harder, and those brave enough to take on the job were likely to raise their rates and demand hazard pay. It would be hard to find the gold for that, especially now that he had forfeited his deposit on Barty's golems. And gold was the least of his problems. All the Gilton in the Freedlands wouldn't buy him a day of Johann's patience. His silver claws, he noticed, were reflexively clenching and unclenching, making soft scissor sounds as they did so. The assassin ducked into a ruined house, braced himself against a wall, and took a moment to collect himself. He recalled that all assassins were eventually stoic, either by maintaining a calculating demeanor or by letting their emotions get them terminally ensnared by one of the many perils of the profession. The key was to look on the bright side. The mission may have failed, but Flynn had gathered valuable information about the nature of the weapons master. It was also possible, if unlikely, that Captain Jones had successfully taken out the Ranger. And even if the pirate had failed, there was a good chance that Flynn had taken down one of the ex-heroes. The Tinderkin smiled at the thought. Flynn's breathing had slowed some, and his blood no longer pounded in his ears. Given the circumstances, he figured this was about as calm as he could muster. He was about to set back out when a mournful howl rang out in the distance. The note had a deep and stony timbre, and while Flynn was no expert on supernatural fauna, he was inclined to think that it sounded like a troll. The only other troll that Flynn had ever encountered had been hunting Gorm Ingerson in the ruins of Bloodroot. Reports of troll sightings were extremely rare, but that was largely because people who encounter trolls usually didn't survive long enough to make reports. Although, now that Flynn thought of it, neither did any of the assassins sent after Ingerson's party. The Tinderkin stared to the east. It couldn't be more than a coincidence. But if it was, Flynn tried to wrap his head around the possibilities.
What does that mean? Gorm growled.
Bert took a long drag on a short cigarette without looking up at the dwarf.
Well, Spug's a shadow tongue swear, and so when I say it's all gone to Spug, I know what Spug means, Gorm barked as the rest of the party approached. But what do you mean they're gone now? They're not here, said Bert. I thought that part was obvious. Aye, but Caitha and Thane were gone before, said Gorm. What do you mean they're gone now? Did you see them? Did they see each other? What happened?
Bert exhaled a cloud of blue-gray smoke that joined the evening mist.
Yeah, they saw each other. They ran off.
What, together? Asked Jin.
No.
The kobold shook his head and took another drag. The pirate was here as well, said Heraldin, retrieving a crumpled hat from the remains of the late assassin.
Here, too.
Laruna made a face and held her stomach as she stepped over something glistening.
Yeah, he really got around at the end there.
Bert gestured at the carnage with his cigarette.
Would you just tell us what bloody happened? Asked Gorm. Thane came back with Caitha, but she was blacked out. Told me to keep her safe. So when that pirate guy showed up and wanted to kill the elf, he took a good chunk out of my ear.
Kobold pointed to the dirty bandage that he wore like a lopsided hat.
Thanks for asking, by the way. I've been asking, Gorm sputtered. Yeah, no, don't worry. So then Thane finally comes back, and he's mad enough to, well, to do all this.
The kobold nodded at the remains of the assassin.
Course it ain't quiet, so that's when the elf came too. and of course she assumed the Shadowkin was on the wrong side of it, so she shot him in the face and ran off screaming.
Gorm's stomach lurched.
Thrice cursed bones, he swore under his breath.
Yeah, Bert took another drag.
Gods, said Jin. So he...
He left, yeah, said Bert.
I feel sick to my stomach.
Laruna looked pale as she shook her head slowly.
We'll go after him, said Gorm determinedly.
The kobold laughed bitterly.
Really? That troll runs faster than even your fancy horses. And have you ever found him when he didn't want you to?
Really, really sick, said Laruna.
It's easy to get fooled by shapeshifters, said Heraldin, staring daggers at Geist. The weapons master parried with a sidelong glance, then looked away.
We've got to try to find him, though, said Gorm. I mean, after all he's done for us, we owe him that.
Do we? Asked Heraldin. Do we really have to charge off to chase a troll? Because I'd like to point out that you made us follow the orcs, and then we ran after a lich, and neither of those chases worked out well for us.
Gorm whirled on the bard.
He'd do it for us! He already has!
And look how it turned out for him!
Heraldin shot back.
No, really, Laruna mumbled.
Laruna? Said Jin. The Solomancer made a little gasping noise as she collapsed in the street.
Poison. Jin's voice was muffled and distant somehow. The thrice-cursed Tinderkin poisoned his bolts.
Laruna felt icy fingers of terror creeping over her, or perhaps that was the toxin. She watched Jin as if through a mist standing above her. He looked regal and frail all at once. She tried to reach out a hand for his, but the ice in her flesh kept her from moving. It took effort just to draw in labored breaths.
A cure potion.
Jin leaned down, and she saw worry painted across his face in deep lines.
We need a cure potion. We ain't had any for months.
Gorm's voice drifted to her from the fog.
Thrice cursed bones of the Sten! Are you sure? Check again!
Jin barked orders as he worked his arms under Laruna and lifted her. His classical wizard's physique, however, was ill-suited to bearing her weight, and after a moment's staggering, he shouted,
Help me get her into shelter!
She felt more arms beneath her, and her head was gently lifted to a place where she could better see Heraldin and Geist holding her. She rolled her eyes toward Jin, and the fear and anger welling up within her subsided a little at the sight of him. Gods, she wanted to hold his hand. They carried her through a door, and possibly another. It was harder to see in the room. At Jin's direction, they laid her on a bed and propped her head up on an old pillow.
No potions on me, she heard Gorm say,
and she could hear sorrow in his voice.
I don't think we got any cures back at the camp, either. Why, by the bones, wouldn't we have cure potions?
Jin clutched his head with both hands.
We ain't exactly well provisioned here, Gorm said, and elixir's been in short supply, so we always bought that instead. Besides, curing poison is a simple spell. For a solomancer or a cleric, snapped Jin. Didn't you think about what would happen if our healer got poisoned?
I'm sorry, lad, said Gorm. I'll go check the guild hall. Maybe the Red Horde left potions behind in the vaults.
Jin looked back at Laruna, and she could see the fear and sadness on his face.
There's no time.
It was terrifying and infuriating to hear, but Laruna couldn't react. It was all she could do to breathe and focus on Jin. Gorm said something to the Noctomancer, but Laruna couldn't make out what.
No. Leave us, said Jin.
Gorm must have replied, because a moment later the Noctomancer turned to the entrance and shouted,
I said leave us!
When he turned back to her, Jin took Laruna's hand in his own and looked into her eyes. She wanted to tell him the things that she'd never said aloud, that she felt things for him she had never thought herself capable of feeling. She saw all the same sentiments staring back at her from his glassy blue irises, and a moment of peace came upon her, even as a tear ran down her cheek. Then he let go of her hand. Her arm fell limply on her belly as he turned away from her. Laruna was confused, and all the more so for the clinical way he spoke to her next.
I wonder, is a secret really a secret, if you intend to take it to your grave? If nobody knows a fact, is it really a fact at all?
Dark mists were closing in around Laruna's vision. She wondered why he'd stopped holding her hand, and what she had done to drain the warmth from his voice, and perhaps most pressingly, why he had chosen such an inappropriate moment to wax philosophical on the nature of truth.
"I suppose I know the answer," he said, rummaging around somewhere she couldn't see. When he stepped back into her field of vision, he carried a long riding glove made from smooth black leather. "I suppose I've always known. I just wanted it to be different."
Laruna tried to silence him, to get him to just hold her in her last moments, but all she could manage was a burbling gasp. He looked at her again. His blue eyes looked cold and distant in the dim light, as though all the warmth and affection from moments ago had been packed up and set aside.
"I would die, Laruna. I would let the world burn. I would give almost anything to keep the truth from coming to light. But not you. I couldn't live with myself, and no afterlife could hold peace for me if I let you die so I could keep this secret."
Confusion and fear threatened to overwhelm what thoughts Laruna could manage, but she couldn't form a coherent question when it took so much concentration just to breathe.
"This is going to hurt me far more than it does you," said Jin. With his right hand he wove threads of noctomancy, pale green strands of wan light. The spell slipped in serpentine spirals from his hand to coil around his left arm, from the elbow to the tip of his fingers. As he finished the incantation, the weave melted into his flesh and vanished.
"Remember that when you think of me." Jin flexed his left hand experimentally, as if doing so for the first time. The dark mists continued to close in around Laruna. She tried to focus on the wizard as he repositioned her arms. She felt the weight of his hand on her chest, just above her heart. It made it even harder to draw in air.
"Remember," said Jin again, and then he gasped.
Laruna felt his hand jolt, saw his face shift between alarming shades of purple as the veins in his forehead surged into stark relief. She heard something wet and heavy drop onto the floor. Then she gasped too, and not just for the sensation of the cool energy flowing into her, because now that the mists had stopped advancing and her breaths were coming a little easier, she could recognize the cure spell being cast upon her. Jin was channeling solomancy.
"Dawn's coming," Gorm said, tightening a strap on Jin's horse. Nobody responded.
Geist stood a short distance away with the solemn silence of a funeral attendee. Heraldin sat near the back of the alley, plucking at a lute. Bert sat near the door, leaning against patches. The kobold had found the dog cowering behind a nearby dumpster, and now they watched the sun rise in silence.
"We should leave," Gorm continued. "The guild's sure to come soon, and we'll want to be elsewhere."
A sour note rang out, and the bard cut off the tone abruptly. Heraldin gave the dwarf a sidelong glance, shook his head, and resumed picking at his lute.
"I meant after, you know," the dwarf shrugged. "We'll give Jin time to make peace with things."
He looked up at the ruined house. The mages had been inside for over an hour. If it wasn't over by now, it would be soon. Losing comrades was the worst part of a professional hero's job. Some laypeople thought that honor would belong to dying at work, a fate that most professional heroes eventually meet, but death only happened on the last day of a hero's career, while burying friends was something an adventurer would deal with over and over again. Gorm could imagine what Jin was feeling. The dwarf had lost many colleagues over his career, and only three to retirement. But what he'd learned over the years was that there was no time for mourning in the field. Whatever killed your friend might still be around, and hungry. You had to tuck your grief away until there was time to drown it in a tankard or three of ale. As he thought about the fallen, one particular face stood out. With a heavy sigh, the dwarf stamped over to lean against the wall next to Geist. The weapons master didn't acknowledge his presence.
"Back when we first met in the Temple of Almatra, I always called you Eheen," Gorm said eventually. "And even when I started using your name, I thought it was just Eheen Rebrandon or some marketing thing. I thought ye were him, that I'd seen it wrong back in the dungeon of Azanon, that I didn't watch him die."
Geist's eyes flicked to Gorm and then back to the red glow on the horizon.
"I wanted that to be true. And it was possible. We were always surprised at how many quests he got done. Mataya once swore he could be in three places at once, you know.
I suppose looking back at it makes sense.
Gorm trailed off as the weapons master strode away to lean against a different wall. The conversation was over.
Awkward,
Haraldin sang without looking at either of them.
Sorry.
Gorm kicked at a couple of stones in the alley. One of them caught his eye. He bent down. A few odds and ends lay in a small pile amid the debris and bits of assassin. There were semi-precious stones, buttons, charms, and other bits that would have been unremarkable, save for the fact that they were uniformly one shade of purple or another. A few had shattered, and most seemed worthless, but among them he recognized a small figure wielding a bent sword. Gorm plucked the toy knight from the dirt.
"This was Thane's," he said. "I think Katha gave it to him."
"Oh?"
Bert said.
"He dropped that stuff just before..."
The kobold was both interrupted and upended as Patches leapt to his feet in a flurry of excited barking. Gorm peered into the darkness where the dog was looking and saw a figure darting toward them.
"Is that?"
Haraldin squinted.
"Aye,"
said Gorm, feeling the first twinge of relief in a long while.
"Ho! Katha! Gorm!"
hissed Katha, running toward them with her head down.
"Gorm, is that really you?"
"Aye, lass, and glad to see ye, but we have to get out of here right now and go and run."
Words tumbled out of Katha in one long breath.
"We have to run. I think there's a troll. I saw it."
"She's still stuck on that, huh?"
said Bert, dusting himself off.
"Why are you all just staring at me?"
Katha hissed, drawing close now.
"I saw a troll attacking a man and..."
"That man over there?"
asked Bert, pointing to the broken figure lying in the street.
"Yes!"
The elf clutched her forehead.
"Why is everyone acting so calm about this? What is happening? Did I really wake up here, or is this another vision?"
"Deep breath, lass."
Gorm held a hand out to her.
"This ain't a vision."
"That's just what a vision would say,"
said Katha, although the tortoise was pretty upfront about things. Gorm brushed the comment aside.
"Look, there's a lot to tell, but all in all, you blacked out because of your salve addiction and wandered off. A friend brought you back to us, but not before we lost our battle against the Tar Ermion."
The elf shook her head.
"That doesn't... Who said anything about me and salve? And who would bring me back? And where did you get that?"
Gorm followed the elf's gaze to the toy knight in his hand.
"Awkward,"
Haraldin sang again.
"Not helping,"
Gorm growled from the side of his mouth.
"Not trying to," the bard shot back. "Where did you get that figurine?"
said Katha.
"I gave that to the king in the wood."
"I know, but I..."
Katha's eyes narrowed to slits.
"How did you know? Was he the friend who brought me back?"
"Aye, but..."
"So did you see the king in the wood? Or how else would you know?"
The elf pressed, stalking closer to Gorm.
"Where is he now? Why would he leave? And it still doesn't make any sense. If he brought me back to you, why did I wake up next to a troll mauling a pirate?"
She stared at the corpse of Captain Jones. "I thought the outfit was part of the hallucinations."
"Which is understandable," said Gorm, hands out. "But that pirate was an assassin. They ambushed us while ye were still away."
The ranger's brow furrowed.
"And what, a troll just happens to walk by and maul him?"
"No,"
said Gorm gently. He handed her the toy paladin.
"But then..."
Realization spread over the elf's face at a glacial pace as the revelations crystallized.
"So then he was... And a troll made that garden, and then he... But I didn't... And that's why..."
"Easy, lass,"
Gorm said.
"And then I... Oh, gods. He was helping. He saved. But then I... And I..."
Notes of despair crept into the ranger's voice.
"Deep breaths. His name is Thane,"
said Gorm.
"He found you in the Mirewood, but I didn't meet him until we were back in Ebonmire."
"You knew that long ago?"
Thunder roared in Katha's voice as she turned back to Gorm.
"How many times did I tell you about him? How many times did I set off to search for him? And you knew who he was? You knew him!"
"I know,"
stammered Gorm.
"But he didn't want us to tell you." "Us?"
screamed Katha.
"How many of you knew? Why would he hide from only me? Why would all of you help him?"
"And this is where it all blows up," said Haraldin to nobody in particular. At that point, the universe took a cue from Nove's principles. The ruined house next to the heroes blew up. A massive fireball sent the roof skyward and scattered flaming debris through the muddy streets. Embers rained down over the remains of the building, which was little more than a pair of walls propping each other up. As the dumbstruck adventurers stared, the door in one of the walls opened, and Jin stepped through. A magical barrier around the wizard winked out of existence as he pulled a black riding glove over his left hand. Behind him, wreathed in wind and flames, stood Laruna.
"You said there were no more secrets!"
the Solomancer bellowed at Jin's back.
"You said I knew everything!"
"Laruna!"
Gorm cried.
"You're alive!"
"That's not the point!"
growled the Solomancer. "I could have been cured well before if he had been honest about being an...
"A what?"
Gorm glanced at the wizard and then did a double take so hard he nearly got whiplash. Jin's robes were changing. A wizard's garments always reflected his status within the Academy of Mages. Young mages were given enchanted robes, attuned to the network of magical ledgers that constantly recorded spellcasters' ranks and titles within their respective orders. Jin's solomancy had radically altered his status within the academy, and now his robes were following suit, so to speak. The gemstone linings and elaborate gold trim had already been absorbed by the fabric of Jin's robes. Intricate designs faded and were replaced by ragged edges and tattered holes as his high counselorship was rescinded, his titles stripped away, and his membership within the Order of the Moon revoked. The iridescent purple dye drained from the garment. By the time Jin was halfway to the horses, he was wearing the dusty, tattered gray robes of an omnimancer.
"Try not to stare," Jin said to the dwarf tersely. "Surely you didn't think you were the only one hiding things."
"Why didn't you tell me?"
Laruna ran after the omnimancer.
"It wouldn't have mattered."
Jin stopped and turned to level a withering glare at the solomancer, skepticism pushing his eyebrows to new heights of condescension. The fire around Laruna wavered a bit.
"Well, I still would have... We could have..."
"As I thought," said Jin. He turned and walked away again.
"You should have told me,"
Laruna sobbed.
"Did you know about the king, about Thane?"
Katha interjected. The flames around Laruna winked out as she noticed the elf.
"Katha, you're back? Did you know about the king in the wood?"
The ranger's voice was as cold and hard as iron.
"Did you meet him as well?"
The Solomancer was overwhelmed by the conflict and her conflicted emotions. She turned away and disappeared from view in a pillar of crimson fire.
"Bones,"
swore Katha, and Gorm could see tears in the corners of her eyes. She followed Jin toward the rail where the horses were tied.
"Awkward," sang Heraldin.
"If you're not helping anything, shut up,"
Gorm snarled at him. The bard laughed bitterly. "We're far beyond help, my friend."
"Is all of my gear here?"
Katha asked, rummaging through the satchels on her horse.
"Don't do anything rash," Gorm began.
"I have to go after him,"
Katha said, slipping her jade bracers over scarred wrists.
"I have to find him, and I have to meet him."
"Well, I'll go," said Gorm. "We'll make it right."
"I won't," said Heraldin.
Gorm fought the overwhelming urge to wring the bard's neck.
"Lad, if ye open your mouth one more time—"
"I won't be going either," Jin announced, climbing atop his own horse.
"But Jin—"
"It's fine," said Katha, saddling her own horse. "You've all done enough already."
"No, Katha. Jin, you can't split the party."
"Gorm, there is no party,"
said Katha, not unkindly.
"A party is a team of heroes that works together. We aren't heroes anymore, and can you honestly say this is working?"
"Could we ever trust each other again?"
Jin asked, staring at Laruna. The flames around the Solomancer subsided once more. The woman they left behind shook her head silently and made for her own horse.
"Did we ever really know each other at all?" Heraldin said, staring at Geist.
The doppelganger turned away, eyes shut tight.
"Come on now, don't do this!"
Gorm felt despair rising in his throat as he watched the other heroes pack their bags and mount their horses.
"What about the Gisvarda tribe? What about stopping Datar? We can get past all this!"
"I intend to," said Jin. "It starts by leaving it behind."
"But you can't—"
"It's already done, Gorm,"
interrupted Katha. She gave him a final curt nod and spurred her horse north.
"Come, Patches," said Jin, turning his own mount west.
"You headed by Andoran?"
Bert scrambled after them and climbed up to ride the dog.
"You can drop me off in the city."
"Very well,"
said the wizard, snapping his reins.
Gorm stared after them.
You too, Bert, eh?
The kobold turned back to wave to the dwarf.
It was a good try, but these things don't always work out for guys like us. In fact, they usually don't. But take care, Gorm.
Bert kicked at Patch's sides, an unnecessary gesture as the dog was happily bounding after his master's horse. One by one, the remaining heroes followed suit, their eyes downcast as they rode away. Gorm stood alone in the street long after they were gone, flaming wreckage smoldering all around him.